You are listening to Investing Matters, brought to you in association with London South East. This is the show that provides informative, educational, and entertaining content from the world of investing. We do not give advice, so please do your own research.
Hello, and welcome to the Investing Matters podcast. My name is Peter Higgins, and today I have the huge privilege of speaking with Edward Martin, the former investment banker, entrepreneur, and founder and CEO of Quoted Data, which is involved in publishing research, data, and events. Welcome, Edward. How are you, sir?
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Thank you ever so much for joining me on this Investing Matters podcast. I'm really looking forward to speaking with you about all things research and investing. So I want to jump straight in, Ed, because I know you're a very, very busy man. I would like to start our conversation with you sharing your roles, responsibilities, insights, and learnings from your role initially as an independent financial advisor, followed by your over 10 years involvement in investment banking at Cassanova, Colin Stewart, etc., please, sir.
Yeah. Well, when I left university, I got a job at an IFA firm, and it was quite a different world. The IFAs today now charge upfront fees and that sort of thing. In those days, it was commission-led. Very sales focused, sort of business and industry and firm that I worked for, but it, you know, it taught me a few things and it gave me a great opportunity to look at the whole world of finance, a word that's used a lot, but, you know, something I ask grads, you know, what do you want to do in finance? And you know, often when you leave university, you don't quite know what you want to do. And people think finance, but there's so many different elements to it. And, you know, working at an IFA firm, I got the chance to look at mortgages and insurance and investments and those sort of things, looking at sort of the holistic picture of one's wealth and protection and lending requirements throughout their life, and which I thought was fascinating, but at the same time it also I discovered that a love for investments, that was really which got me fired up, and you know, the idea of making money was far more exciting than paying out money to for an insurance policy. So you know, my heart, it was very much the investment side that I knew I needed to get into. And you know, at that stage, I, you know, was doing well at the firm, but I was keen to get into I'd thought about which elements, and you know, I think I showed traits of more the sales side rather than the buy side, and I chose, you know, and worked out. Again, it's confusing to, you know, the word finance when you leave university and finding out where your home is, and you know, the same with the term investment banking, which is a big name, and there's so many different parts to investment banks, but I felt after meeting many people that it was the equity sales side and the investor relations side that really motivated me, and yeah, loved it. What a, you know, great opportunity working at Cassanova and on the trading floor with incredible people. And listening to the noise and buzz of trading around you and that sort of thing was pretty special. And I'm very lucky to have worked there. And it taught me a lot. You know, you meet, you know, incredible people, whether that's listed, you know, entrepreneurs or maybe not so many entrepreneurs, but certainly business leaders and that was fascinating. But you know, as time went on, I felt that there was an itch to, you know, in, with my investment banking that I was keen to not just think year by year for a bonus, that I was keen to generate and create. I was keen to create something and build something over, and think a lot longer term for myself, but also, you know, others, and wanted to be in a position to help others. And I felt that if I was constantly at the mercy of a bonus, you know, at the end of a year, and, you know, obviously generous salary as well, but that wasn't the key motive. Money, it wasn't just the key motivator for me. I needed a little bit more, and you know, certainly going down that entrepreneurial route has delivered many parts of that. It's very exciting to build something and see others thrive under it, and meet so many people and build on the platform that you're building out and build the people up. So I get great enthusiasm out of that, and I think if I'd done that route within an investment bank, it would have been slightly different. You're creating value for others, and it's nice to be that, you know, I'm creating value for myself as well as others and who work at the firm and other stakeholders and our clients and that sort of thing. So I feel completely aligned and motivated by that.
Brilliant.
So hopefully that answers your question, Peter.
It does. Thank you, Edward. And I wanted to touch on that particular bit with regards to what led you to your entrepreneurial passion to set up, which was at that time an equity agency broker. And please just share with us that a little bit about that startup journey and subsequent successful sale, and to whom, please.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very small part of the story, but it is an important one, I guess, because, again, there was an entrepreneur there who was very good at what he did on the trading side. And, I was keen to learn from him how to set up a regulated business and build up a regulated business and sell a regulated business. So, you know, I was a small part of that, but I was a part of that. And, that was enlightening, and it gave me one of the bits. I was keen when I left investment banking to set up a business. I didn't know quite what. And then I knew about investment banking and research. And so I ended up helping this chap build up the business. We then both sold the business. And then I was very keen. I knew exactly. I spotted a niche in the research industry, and that's why I set up Quoted Data.
Fantastic! Thank you ever so much. I'm just going to say that that business was sold to Spare Bank One Markets, which is part of the second biggest savings alliance in Norway. So that was quite a significant sort of coup to get that sold to such a large agency, Edward. So having done that bit of entrepreneurial and had your fix, as some would say, you went on then and identified something that you felt was much needed. And you founded essentially Quoted Data in 2023. What was that niche within the research side that you found, that you saw that needed to be resolved?
Well, it was clear that the retail market and smaller wealth managers were not getting the information they needed to manage money. There was demand for a greater information, and there was demand from corporates and listed funds to raise their profile. And effectively, I've spent 10, 11 years now building a firm. I set up the firm with James Carthew, my business partner, who I used to broker to when I was at CAS, actually. So I was on the sell side, he was on the buy side, running a list, an investment trust, all investment trusts and REITs and that sort of thing. Anyway, so we set up the business, and I presented to him this idea, and he agreed that this was an interesting idea, and we've worked together since, and we've been able to build up a book of incredible clients. You know, we've always looked for quality. Maybe that's a differentiator between us and others, but we're looking to work with the best companies and support them on their communications and news coverage and research. But we also provide news on every single company, as particularly strong in REITs and investment trusts. And we like to be independent. Now, we collect our revenues from advertising and sponsored content, but we really need quite a rigorous external editing panel to review the content and ensure that it's as independent as possible, especially when we come into our sponsored content, and then we distribute that. So that's the research, but then it's news and the data and the videos and all sorts of things that we do to really work with that niche, like I was talking about. So that demand from investors to find out more about investment, which you would understand, Peter, and your firm. There's a thirst out there and a growing thirst for that sort of information. And, part of the reason for being here today, but also corporates. You know, there are corporates out there that that are willing to pay to get access to that sort of audience and investor groups and update their own shareholders and what they're doing, and also potential shareholders. So it's the firm's very much focused on that balance and of capital and a need for capital.
Indeed, and one of the wonderful things that I appreciate about what you've done with Croated Data is that you've enabled investors to access your services for free and the content for free. But I just need to ask that question, if you could just reiterate for me. How does Croated Data go about making money to then give the content out for free to investors?
Yeah, so like I said, the advertising and the sponsored content is sort of the main drivers. We also set up investor events, conferences, webinars, that sort of thing. We help actually other investor shows with their shows as well, driving delegates to these shows, but also clients and helping them. And that helps again. The research side, but the research side of the business is the key driver for the firm. We employ experienced analysts in the sectors that we cover. We don't cover all equity sectors. We're very, specialist. We want to be the number one in each sector we cover. Listed funds is where we really do, pick the best clients and where it's been we've been driving the business. That some of those corporates range from like the largest asset manager in the world, like the BlackRocks, down to really interesting boutiques that are achieving real difference.
Okay, Ed, so please can you give us an overview of Croated Data, followed by its research solutions, offerings, some of the partners you work with, and the differentiated services you provide, please?
Yeah, well, Croated Data provides investors with data, news, research on listed funds. That's investment trusts, investment companies, REITs, holding companies. And we differentiate because of the quality of our research and news coverage. We only work with companies that we believe are good And you know, we're not here just to work with every client that approaches us. And I think that's a key differentiator. We are offering a very holistic coverage to clients. We go a bit further than maybe others do, and making sure that content is repurposed and distributed and to the right sort of investors. So yeah, hopefully that answers that question.
Thank you ever so much for that, Ed. You've already mentioned your co-founder, James Carthew, but I've looked at the roster of people that you've got, and you've packed it with some outstanding individuals. How has Quoted Data gone about attracting such standout quality of industry professionals to Quoted Data?
That's a good question, Peter. I mean, finding and retaining good quality staff is important. You know, my job is to spot individuals who can offer us and our readers an extra edge on investing. It is difficult. You interview a lot of people, and you know, it's and building up the culture of the firm. You know, it's a very diverse team that is open to swapping ideas and challenging ideas and creating interesting content and independent content for investors. So that is a very good question. I think it's the fact that we are more independent than others. I think that's a key differentiator with us. We make that very clear to any client that we're taking on, that our content must be independent. And you know, we control the content. The content's ours. We work with our analysts to make sure that they are independent. We have external editors that will check their work, questionnaires and checklists to get through to make sure that when something gets published, it's, you know, of the highest quality. So I think when you are applying for a firm like ours, that is very important if you are an analyst. You know, at the end of the day, we're deriving, like publishers and other sponsored research providers, revenues from listed companies and also advertisers. And I think, you know, that is something that, you know, I think if we focus on the better companies to cover, then you will get better analysts who want to work at your firm, and you know, hopefully they know that I'm going to support that drive for independence. And I feel that that's one of my most important roles, is the independent side of things, but also to find the right people to help us deliver on that, rather than produce content that isn't, you know, up to scratch.
Indeed, I love the way you've answered that, because it answers my other question that would have been about conflicts of interest. And I think you staying into the quality side of it, and having the culture coming all the way down from yourself and James ensures that conflicts don't happen. So thank you for addressing that.
That's all right. And you know, we also write in other publications like CityWire and things like that. I think that's important for our analysts to have those channels, and you know, we can highlight our independence and chat about different topics and you know, keep our analysts on their toes, you know, and looking out and finding out what's in the industry. And I think that will only make our research ever more enjoyable for investors.
Indeed. Thank you ever so much for that, Edward. Now, Edward, in your view, how could investment research be improved even further and be made more accessible for all participants, which is what you're trying and driving at Quoted Data?
Yeah, well, I'm a big, that's something that I'm going to group lots of research providers up this week, actually. I'm getting everyone together, and I've spoken to the Treasury about it, and Rachel Kent and this research review. about is a code of conduct. I think, you know, there should be a code of conduct in the industry. I'm very keen that there is one. I'm very passionate about what we do, and I know there's a lot of people who have built firms who are passionate about what they do, whether that's research houses that derive their revenues from investors or sponsors. Either way, there just needs to be, a sensible code of conduct, so that readers, investors will have a very clear idea of where the conflicts are. We're very proud of the system that we've built, and how we manage conflicts. But that our content provides investors with very valuable information, and so we think with the profile of the industry could be increased by, dare I say, increased regulation in this area, and just a code of conduct that providers should provide. And hopefully the government can fund and support the research industry, but that might not come about. It's a sensitive topic, especially with an election coming up, but let's see. But I think we're very proud of what we do, and I think that code of conduct would be is needed in the industry. I think it really would improve things for the industry. In regards to full question?
My second part was just to make it more accessible for all participants.
Thank you. So I think, obviously I've talked about the continence and the need for independence and the code of conduct. I think that's important. That was really interesting that Rachel Kent brought up, but I haven't heard that being mentioned much recently, but I do hope that's still on her agenda. I'm sure it is. In regards to distribution of it, I set the business up realizing that a certain number of investor groups, such as IFAs and private investors and smaller wealth managers, aren't getting this research, which they need to do their due diligence to make investments or stay interested, or be updated in the investments that they have. And so we've done everything. We're going to we pick the best investor events, and we work with those providers. We often bring our clients down. We have a quota data fund village where we'll have our stand with our research there, but also our analysts will come down and meet investors, and our clients will come down. And so we've got a big show. I think you guys are going to be there anyway, Master Investor, who are a good outfit, that a good balance of good quality investors and corporates coming down, and we support them with that show. So we do love working with third parties. We can't be brilliant at everything, but partnership and cooperation is important. We do our own events, but they certainly put on a very good one, and that's the 9th of March. So do sign up for that one if you're listening. But we also, do advertising. We do podcasts such as this. We do news on every listed fund. We are, we love the space. Our analysts love what they do there. We do periodicals. We have a weekly roundup, monthly roundup, quarterly, annual, and we do some thematic pieces and opinion pieces. So, we really do try in and offer a whole range of things for investors. And it is all free, but it's all there for the investor journey and to give them what they need.
Thank you for that. And it's wonderful that you're doing that piece of work with other research firms to take to the Treasury to enhance what's available across the whole spectrum of the research industry. So I really appreciate you doing that piece of work. And like you just said, I look forward to seeing you at the Master Investor Show on March the 9th as well. Now, given all the work that you guys have done at Quoted Data, Ed, could you just tell us about some of the industry achievements that you guys have had, and any of the awards that you may have had previously as well, what you're looking to do going forward?
Yeah, I mean, we're not award chasers, and there aren't many awards out there for firms like ourselves. They tend to group where the major money is, which is the asset managers. So you'll see this asset manager and that asset manager winning this award or that award. But we have won research awards, obviously, and Investment Week awards and various others like that. Interestingly, we are about to set up our own awards program, so investors can vote on various categories that our judges will lay out, and so that's going to be coming around Q3. But really, the awards, it's going to sound rather corny, the best award is looking at our readership stats and, you know, on our research and content going out, and that's just building and building and building. So we're getting really good traction on what we do. Corporates want to be involved in that. Investors are clearly loving it, and that is the most rewarding aspect. But of course, occasionally holding up a trophy would be rather nice. Is rather nice, and would be nice if there were more awards around for producing research. But there aren't. Yeah.
And also producing podcasts and interviews, though, at, you know,
category. Oh, true, yeah. Exactly, yeah. You get invitations to speak at shows like yours, Peter, yeah.
Absolutely. Now, I'm gonna take a little bit of a mini break here, if I may, Ed, and I want to ask you about your own investing journey. You touched on the fact that, you know, you started off as an IFA. So I want to start by asking you, when did you actually start investing yourself, you know, your own personal wealth at the time? And what was your initial strategy like, and how did that evolve over time?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have money, just a few, you know, bit of student debt, really. I didn't have money at all. But you know, through earnings and, you know, working hard and well, have built up wealth, but also investing has been a something that I have liked to do. I tried to allocate a little bit of income every month to various pots, so that if you get a pay rise or something like that, then, you know, instantly you try and up the amount that you're putting in your savings, so you don't instantly enjoy the high life of extra earnings. That has been a key discipline of mine, is allocating cash to savings and investments. But on the investing side, as this is the Investing Matters podcast, I started. You know, on the investment trust desk at Cazenove, looking at discounts for investment trusts, so I couldn't help but get into value and spot opportunities when discounts were wide, and looking at the mean reversion of discounts, like many clients were doing, just to enhance their returns over time. So I, of course, did that. But I must admit, focusing on that, I missed the first part of the growth a massive allocation of capital to the growth markets, and you know, I got into that late, but I certainly got into it and made significant returns once I realized that I was a bit behind the curve on that one. But I now look for, and you know, I guess my investing style was a bit too short term at that stage in my life, and I think, you know, focusing on the long term, like for me, setting up a business is important. That was a long term decision. Investing should be long term, and therefore, you know, growth and buying growth of value is a key thing for me. But you know, I'm very privileged. You know, I really love what I do. I meet incredible people. Just walking to lunch today, I bumped into, one of the greatest investors. We chatted about his love for, for horse racing and various things. But of course, we chat a little bit about work and, you know, and his portfolio and how things are actually turning set to turn around for him and his fund. But, you know, meeting all these different people and seeing the spark in their eye and what drives them and how they are making returns is rather wonderful. So I do listen. I like meeting and finding out how people tick and you know, whether that's employees or investors. And I allocate resources. It's obviously, given that we have expertise in funds and listed funds in particular, investment trusts, investment companies, REITs, that sort of thing, there is a larger proportion in those areas. And, you know, I like the diversification and the performance that comes from them. You know, listed closed-end funds are fantastic vehicles, far better structures than open-ended funds for so many asset classes. And it's really interesting. And it's not such a big universe. So you can really get to grips with the companies there. And that's why, you know, we have,
Brilliant. Thank you for that reply. Now, I'm just trying to tease out a little bit there. You mentioned diversifications. Which sort of sectors do you find yourself predominantly in, if there is one, or are you the sort of individual that likes to look at all of the arenas available to your investments?
Well, there is a bit of a growth stance, but you know, clearly when there is an area that I really don't know a huge amount about, like tech or biotech or healthcare, you know, I do like allocating to my proxy to someone else, i.e. a fund manager, to manage those aspects of a portfolio, and looking for those people who really are involved and motivated to drive returns. I think, you know, that's something that obviously clearly a fund can do for you. You know, you can't know everything, and you really need to allocate those decision making to people who are better placed for it, in my view. So that's certainly, there's a bit of a trend there. I have some really interesting mandates, the sort of more absolute return funds, as I think they don't like being labeled the trend is these funds are cool, but the multi-asset manager type funds, there are some very good managers there. There's a lot of average managers out there as well. But, you know, I like keeping in touch with what they think about the world. Looking at people who are always negative is always helpful to keep your feet on the ground. At the same time, listening to people who are positive and just chewing that all over and understanding where we are in cycles and that sort of thing. People with who are experts in certain fields, you know, I like to be slightly closer to them and you know, more likely to invest in those sort of funds that, you know, if they do communicate well to the market and inspire others and look like they are offering something a bit different than I would like to be involved in that sort of with those sort of people. So yeah, I think those sort of individuals are quite inspiring, and listening to their underlying portfolios is always interesting, and I would say I'm overweight those I like to think overweight excellence,
excellence and quality. That's,
you know,
that's
it's
great.
Not always right. You know, I think those people who proclaim that their investments and always talk about their winners and things like that, you know, I'm less likely to listen to. Time is short as it is, and I like to hear where people have got it wrong, and can be very straight with you. I think, you know, the industry as a whole could be a bit more open. And communication is key. We talk with clients about this. You know, we will write about things that you get wrong, and you know, it's important to communicate to the investing market. And of course, companies that do that do get a better rating.
Agreed. Now, I'm going to pose this question because yourself, James, the investment industry and all investors have been asking for at least 12 months now. It feels a bit much longer than that. About how can so many ostensibly good companies be so out of favor? So I suppose my question is, which of the question that you guys posed at Quoted Data is there any easy fix for investment companies and a discount problem they're facing and continue to face currently, Edward?
There is a cost review occurring at the moment, which the government and the Treasury and the FCA are looking at. So we hope that there'll be some more news coming through on that. I won't be too specific about that, but you know, investment companies are, like you say, they are on a wide discount at the moment. They do show great opportunity. It would be wrong to assume that all of this is allocated to the cost disclosures issue at the moment, but you know, it does make sense. You know, especially those alternative investment companies that have done a wonderful job converting, you know, shifting our transition from to greener resources of energy production, you know, to starve them of capital just seems a bit odd to me. And I hope that more people will support these companies and allow them to grow, and we need to give them the best chance to grow. So I am, you know, so I think, yes, that in that regard, I think, you know, things could be better for the, for those companies. And that's clear. You're seeing them, a lot of them campaigning at the moment, and we know the Chancellor's heard it, and BIM's looking at it, and the Treasury and the FCA, sorry, I hopefully are going to be delivering some positive news in that area shortly. I think the UK as a whole is an interesting market. It's such incredible value at the moment. It's so oversold. I think on an average of 7x earnings, you know, you look at the valuations of US companies, I just can't help that there should be a rethink on people's allocations to the US. If I ring around wealth managers, on average, they only have about the UK investment wealth manager. UK wealth managers will only have around 5% in the UK, which is in my whole career, and times never before have we had such a low weighting to the UK. And I think, you know, the government could do something pretty special with the British ISA. If that comes along, or you know, just the fact that one pays income tax, I think that that money that gets put back into my pension, that there should be some constraints that should be you know, allocated to, in proportion to UK companies, whether that's listed or not doesn't care, but it should be you know, if I'm a taxpayer, I'm assuming that the tax is going to help the UK, not going off to international companies, mainly US tech. You know, I think that you know, the world stock markets has changed. The UK isn't such a leading player. I think the government need to have a rethink. I don't think they were wrong necessarily or how it was set up before. It's just that the world has changed. There's so much wealth in very few companies. You know, investments. Many of our investments in the UK are tied up in large tech US stocks, and I think that suddenly you think that your taxpayers' money is going in to support that. I'm sorry, but that just needs a little bit of a rethink, as the markets are so weighted that way now, and the UK is, you know, clearly the institutions are already run. I, you know, it's very there's not many institutions left in the UK, and you know, the wealth managers and all sort of investors have fled the UK, and clearly retail is important, and that's why maybe retail is people are turning their attention to retail. It's because there's lack of capital to invest in the UK. So you know, allowing that is clearly a positive thing. You know, it's something that I've been campaigning about. But you know, this is happening probably because the rest of the world has left the UK. The government needs to do something to support and change that. And there are seriously impressive people working on that. And you only have to open up the newspapers and LinkedIn and various news portals to see who those individuals are. But they are impressive. And I do think, and hats off to those campaigners for getting out there and trying to create, change the situation and improve things for investors, but also the UK. So coming back to your questions, yes, there are things that can be done. There can be quick fixes, and there is long-term aspects, and that's what we need to provide here in the UK. So hopefully that answers your question, Peter, in a rather long-winded way.
It does. Thank you very much, Edward. I wanted to just ask a tiny little question in the middle of all of that. You touched on it a little bit, but I also wanted to expand on it to get your personal view, not necessarily Quoted Data's view, as to what do you think was the trigger in 2023 for that herd-like stampede by private investors and institutions large and small into that artificial intelligence and generative AI space last year? Because everyone just seems to be heading into one direction and away from ESG, renewables, and sustainable investments.
I think it's clearly there's a herd mentality out there. I think tech has driven such phenomenal growth in the stock markets over the last for a long time, and people are we haven't fully seen the impacts of what AI can do. I think it is a really interesting area, but it is early, and I think there will be corrections, it's a niche area, and it's driving a lot of returns in the tech funds, and the ESG thing was clearly there was a lot of capital allocated that area, and there was greenwashing occurring, and I think it just went, there was too much capital allocated in that, and everyone proclaimed to be ESG specialists. So I think that just got ahead of itself. I there will be a time when I could say the same about AI, but who knows what at what time. But my advice would be just to make sure that things were diversified. Don't allocate all your things and put all your eggs into one basket. But it is an interesting space, AI. I do read a little bit about it. Some of it goes over my head, and thankfully we have people who understand it better than I. But I think it will change our world, just like the internet did. We will, at what speed and how, I've got an idea on how it, at certain aspects of how, but we don't know fully. It's an interesting space.
Thank you, Edwin. I wanted to touch on that, if I may, because one of the things I've noticed across the industry over the past 18 months or so are some significantly noteworthy fund managers retiring, others leaving established firms to set up unique advice and boutique wealth management firms, and others basically just deciding they've had enough. The likes of Ben Whitmore, who was at Jupiter, went to set up his own firm. I think it was John Bennett, retired from Janus Henderson, and a few others. Is there a risk that the large investment industry firms don't really see the capital allocation coming back because of these new smaller firms growing and therefore taking some of that previous inflows of capital that they used to have?
People leaving firms to set up new firms and people retiring is not a new trend. Are you saying that there is an increased rate of this happening? I don't think there is there?
I think
there's quite a lot of consolidation in the industry. I would go and say, well, I don't have the data in front of me, but there's a bit of consolidation in the industry. I think people have to be brave to set up their own firms. You've got the Woodfords issue and the compliance headaches of setting up firms. Mm. So I think people think twice now about setting up their own firms. But in regards to retirement, that's always happened. I suspect COVID impact on some people's decision making. The comfort from working home and the politics of dragging people back to the office may have impacted marginally on that. But what is rather wonderful is how our industry, there are people who will work, all the time that they have. And it is an interesting area that we're in. I feel very lucky to be working in it. And so maybe, you know, there could be a trend of people wanting that extra comfort in a smaller firm along that. But I can't really comment. I mean, there are individual cases. For sure, those larger firms are getting larger. There are governments and regulatory bodies to ensure sure of that, and that well-funded by larger asset managers is my cynical thinking around that. But no, I think there is some sense around it as well. Cost cutting is a major focus, especially in the UK. I think there really does need to be a shake-up on that. I think, you know, things, if we could really get back to trying to create returns and value for money for investors, that would be a lot better. So focusing on creating growth. I don't personally have a problem with performance fees and things like that to motivate people's success and drive people. But again, I think America wins on this one. They're focusing on wealth creation far more than maybe the UK market, which is more about cost cutting. And maybe there are fund managers out there and investors out there who just want to free themselves of this and want to create an environment that they return back to wealth creation and in an environment that suits them. So, I haven't got the data, but I'll look into it after this call, Peter.
Thank you very much. Now, you mentioned just briefly there, takeovers. Takeovers, mergers and disposals appear to be the order of the day for many investment companies at the moment. What are your thoughts regarding the de-equitization of the investment industry and UK markets in general, Edward?
Mergers in the investment, firstly, the investment companies, I think is great. You know, there's clearly there's some consolidation that's needed. You know, and boards need to continuously always think about that. But, I think that there is, that's a part of a cycle. I think I don't see anything. I don't think there's much more to add than that, really. Just trying to, there will always be acquisitions, disposals, mergers, wind-ups. So I just think that just keeps things fresh. And all investment companies should be focused on making returns for their investors and making things are as sharp as they can be. But
Yeah, I think they're trying to combat at the moment the very wide discounts, hence some of them are getting rid of certain parts of the businesses or merging, accelerating that going forward. But I want to touch now, if I may, with regards to you personally, Edward, as to what aspects, I think you've touched on it a little bit already, of the investment industry really, really piques your interest. And also a little bit about the bits that you don't like about the industry at the moment, if you can be so bold.
What I like about the industry, I love the fact that there are some incredible people that are driving great change. We are very privileged to be working in a sector of investments that can generate and drive growth around the world and in the UK. And with the right systems, with that can accelerate, of course. So that's very exciting to be watching what the government do. Of course, there's going to be a change of, well, not of course, but there could be a change of government very shortly. But I believe that that's shared on the other side of the fence as well. So long may that remain to drive growth. Yeah, I think there are lots of great things. There's lots of great value out there at the moment. There's fantastic growth opportunities. It's harder to find those growth opportunities. Obviously, there's those momentum trades that, of AI and things like that and tech. But, a lot of the people, the same people I'm talking to are looking at other aspects of the market, not just those. So I think, it is exciting. There's lots out there to be reaped. In regards to what I don't like, I think just a focus on costs the whole time gets a bit wearing. Certainly our firm, we are connecting a huge number of investors to companies, and I think they appreciate the value that we offer. Which is great, but I know the asset managers themselves. There's this increased focus, regulatory pressure on them, and to always focus on costs, and I think that can mean that there is a less attention applied to creating value for investors, i.e., growth returns, And I think there is some fantastic talent out there, and they need to be rewarded for that. But yeah, I'm sure if I had longer to think about that question, I would come up with a better answer, Peter. But there are always things that rattle me every day, and things I find interesting every day, and things that amaze me every day. So I'm fortunate to have that. My job in that, I have that sort of roller coaster of emotions that I care about it, and I'm privileged to have access to those sort of investors and money makers.
Thank you for that response, Edward. I've got two more questions for you, and I'm going to try and wrap it up because I've had you here for a little while. And I appreciate your time is precious. We spoke earlier about Quoted Data's platform being freely accessible for investors, which I think is absolutely fantastic, by the way, and unlaudable. We've touched a little bit about tech, and I wanted to ask you, because obviously Quoted Data are heavily involved in research, content, and investment services. Are you and the team considering or already started embracing AI and generative AI within the company? Or is it something that you're not really considering going forward?
No, I mean, it would be silly not to keep to I've spoken to different people. I'm going to find out more this week, actually, when I group together the industry sort of gets together and we can chat about things. But look, I mean, this is generative AI is here, and it's we've tested bits and bobs. It really isn't there at the moment. And we have thought about ideas to fund further research. We need to do probably more in that space, but You know, I think with these technologies, certainly not going away, you know, you cannot tell every country in the world to stop doing AI. So it's here to stay. Once it's here, you can't not invent it. So it will happen. It will change what we do over the time, over the long run. Certainly in the short run, it's not changing a thing. We don't use it in our processes. We have tested various systems. Really is not the quality that we expect. So we are quite a long way off, I believe, that. But we will review this. You know, we need to stay on top of our game. We need to be providing investors what they need, and clients. And the world of content creation and distribution is always changing. I mean, it is exhausting, the days where we're always researching a new bit of tech, or whether to it's mainly on the distribution side and the reporting side, but certainly it will also flood into content creation as well in the future. But at the moment, I sit down with analysts. I'm trying to get them to record their meetings so that at least they have a transcript, rather than writing down their notes and things like that, and just dictating effectively what the guy's saying, so they can actually shift away to using their head a bit more in meetings and things like that. We work with talented individuals, but trying to optimize some of their processes. I imagine that the route that we will be going with that, to date we're not, there aren't many firms adopting it in our industry yet, but I'm sure many are listening and watching what's being done in other content areas and seeing how that could be applied. But
brilliant. No, I appreciate that reply. But now I've got a final question for you. This is my fun question that I like to ask certain individuals, Edward. So brace yourself. You ready now for this? Okay. Edward, you're an excellent entrepreneur. I'm going to grant you complete autonomy and power over the investment industry. What changes would you make immediately and why?
Good question. I really don't know where to start. There are so many little things to fix that I think. But in regards to one thing,
you can have more than one, Edward. You can have more than one. Changes.
Yeah, I certainly think sorry to bring this up to governments again, but I certainly think.
Okay.
And it was a case of listening to the economics secretary, and I heard a question fired at him, and I felt that there was a little bit of this is not my territory, it's really the education secretary's responsibility. But I really wish that the economic secretary and the education minister could get together and create a framework and funding and support to educate children, people as a whole more in investments, and understand the difference between saving and investments and the different routes and options. We talk about it like we spent every waking hour thinking about it and working in it, but I think there is a huge chunk of the world, but also the nation, that really hasn't got a grasp of it, and I think that could change, and I think it'd be much better. I've traveled around the world to various investor conferences, and it's amazing how they aren't wrapped in cotton wool, and their knowledge is far greater. So I do think a little bit of freedom for people to maybe cut themselves in investing, but not break something, if you know what I mean. I think that people should be allowed to make mistakes. There shouldn't be so much cotton wool put about. I think there is so much, and with education and financial support from the government to educate people on investments and getting it into the curriculum as well, I think that would be really a wonderful thing. And I think it's an obvious one. That different government departments should be working towards, but I haven't seen a huge amount of change there, I'm afraid. But that is the one thing I would like to see change. But there are lots of things, but that's the one I think I would like to respond with.
Brilliant! I love that response, Edward. Thank you ever so much, ladies and gents. Thank you ever so much for listening to this Investing Matters podcast. I was blessed to be able to speak today with Edward Martin, former IFA, former investment banker, entrepreneur, founder, and CEO of Quoted Data. Edward, thank you ever so much for being on here with me today. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to Investing Matters. Be sure to check out the London South East website for free tools and info to research your next investment. You can also join in the conversation on our social media channels. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more content, including our CEO interviews. Catch you next time.